second, their problems. When Humanaviti was published in, what year was Humanaviti published? My dear friend, do remember. What is it?
68.
68. Okay. In the next year or two, teaching in North Aurora, in the Rockford Diocese, where we had our Scholastica then, the newly ordained would come. I would be counseling them besides teaching them. And they said, Father, I'm just scared to hear confessions. I said, well, what are you scared of? Well, all that I read of people, everybody is practicing contraception. I said, nonsense. Not everybody is practicing contraception. And what can I tell people? They come to confession. I tell them, don't compromise on the church's teaching. Know it? Know it clear. But then, and this is some years before this was published, I told them, don't ram Humani Vitae down their throats. Be kind. Suppose they do confess. And by the way, if they come, see a woman, comes to confession, and has confessed contraception. Well, my dear friend, I told the newly ordained priest, she must think there's something wrong with it. So don't tell her that it's not wrong. You're going to scandalize her. But you're going to talk about her problems. And you may not be able to stop her. She may talk for the next 15 minutes. And by the time she shared with you her problems and realizes that you're sympathetic, she will then be disposed to listen to the church's teaching. There is nothing more effective to render people disposed to accept the truth than to show them love. You show people love, and they will be ready for the truth. Mark my words. Even if the truth may be bitter, or sharp, or as it sometimes is, painful. We are willing to be led, provided we know the one who leads us cares. Right? That's number 10. Is it number 10? What are we supposed to eat? Who's in charge here? Okay. Well, if you don't mind then, let's say the Angelus, and then 1:45 we come back, is that it? And we'll continue, is it all right? In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, the end of the... In view of our limitations of time, what I thought I would do is, rather than write everything on the board, I have listed a few that will go on through the encyclical, will verbally state, indicate the source, and not always be putting in written form. Number 11 is in section 15. It occurs at the beginning of the second paragraph, and the Pope's statement reads, "The man of today seems ever to be under threat from what he produces, that is to say, from the result of the work of his hands, and even more so of the work of his intellect and the tendencies of his will." The modern vocabulary has coined a term never before known in human history, and that is Frankenstein. The term, as you know, is the name of a movie, but more significantly, it is the title of a fact. As we shall see in going on, what the Pope is driving towards is the uneven contest that's going on between two forms of what should both be progress. There is unquestionable progress in the physical, material welfare of man. There is not, to say the least, corresponding progress in man's mortal life. The source of the conflict is that man's production, and not merely material, physical production, the machinery, the jets, the television sets, or whatever else symbolizes modern society. There has been phenomenal progress in the mind and the will. The mind's discovering things it never knew before. The will being capable to achieve what it never dreamt possible before. The conflict arises from the fact that this progress in production, in mind and will, has not kept pace or been kept pace by a corresponding progress in man's religious life, in things of the spirit. And as a consequence, take on each of the three levels, production, mind, and will. We now are capable of producing, and we hardly know where to start. Modern science is said to discover more in any 50-year period now than man had known in the physical sciences in all the previous centuries put together. Take, for example, nuclear fission, the breaking out of the atom, as man has succeeded in somehow prying loose the forces that hold together the atom. In the process of doing so, forces have been released that we never, in our wildest dreams, thought possible. Have been reading about the nuclear explosion in Pennsylvania? Or, as a matter of fact, just nuclear power that is being used now to prepare weapons that can destroy literally the human race. Take the discovery of electronics. All the electronics discoveries can be basically reduced to one single find made by science, that all metals emit energy on being hit by light. Light rays force radiation from all metals, some more than others. That single discovery, in a way a simple thing, has revolutionized our media of communications. But as we know, these media are now being used in so many ways to the detriment of man. So there has been progress in production, but needless to say, it has not been all for man's benefit in the mind. We now know more, see, about the human psyche. I remember some years ago listening to a speech here in Chicago given by Vance Packard. You may have seen his books. He's written a number of titles in the psychology, for example, of advertising. I think he called it the hidden seekers, hidden persuaders. He told us that modern advertising is now using, because of their knowledge of the human mind, the most subtle, in-depth psychology to evoke passions by the people who are thus stimulated. Never dream they are being thus excited. The knowledge, for example, of history. We know more now about what's happened in the past than we ever knew before. Needless to say, not all of that knowledge, in fact, so much of it is being used to tear down, to debunk, as we say, the great heroes and even the great achievements of the church. Take in the power of the wheel. We now can achieve more in terms of sheer willpower because, say, of the ability to manipulate the media. One human being in a 1 hour's talk on radio can debauch a whole nation. For years, the abortionists got control of the media. So we now have abortion. The contraceptionists got hold of the media. So we now have a contraceptive society. So the willpower is indeed for good, but it can also be for evil. Now, to come back to the Pope's statement. We are now waking up in a way that we never thought would happen when the discoveries were first made. We are now waking up to the fact that what we produce can destroy us. Can destroy us as with nuclear fission physically. Can destroy us mentally or intellectually through the brainwashing that is being carried on a cosmic scale. Can be destroyed by a single man's perverted will. A Hitler, a Stalin, or Margaret Sanger, by the way, this year her 100th birthday is going to be celebrated. You know who Margaret Sanger is? Well, let me tell you. She is the great crusader for contraception. Her maiden name was Hennessy. Her mother was a Catholic. Her father had been a Catholic. She lost her faith because of her father and became an ardent contraceptionist and euthanasia, which, by the way, is already legislated in, as you know, a number of states. California now has formal, explicit euthanasia laws. And, by the way, one of the purposes of the law, already the statutes of California, is to make unnecessary such institutions as St. Mary of Providence. Did I tell you, was it last time we met, about the decision of the New York judge regarding amniocentesis? Where now doctors, at least in New York State, will be held liable for not performing the amniocentesis to find out whether the prospective child to be born would be somehow, well, handicapped physically or emotionally. And he is then, so the judge stated, to prescribe an abortion If he does not, he will lose his license if it can be proved afterwards that he has neglect. Burdened, the mother, with an unwanted, handicapped offspring. In my 5 years in New York, I found out what New York does, the rest of the country will do. And we're scared, frankly, and this is what the Pope is telling us, that what we thought human genius could produce to help us, we are now discovering he is producing Frankensteins. And the title of the movie is no joke. Take, for example, a Raymond Brown with his erudition. Great scholarship. Look what he's doing with that intelligence. Or a McGran, or a Charles Curran. So that progress in the use of either one's genius in production, or the mind, or the will, so far from guaranteeing benefits, is now threatening, literally, the world with destruction. The next one is there modern progress? This is in number 16, oh, pardon me, still number 15, it's reading in 16. And it occurs at the beginning of the section, the sentence reads, man's situation in the modern world seems indeed to be far removed from the objective demands of the moral order, from the requirements of justice, and even more of social love. The Pope had just said, if therefore our time, the time of our generation, the time that is approaching the end of the second millennium of the Christian era, shows itself a time of great progress, it is also seen as a time of threat in many forms of man. Or, as we might illustrate, suppose we made two graphs. And made this, say, 1900, and this, the present date, 1979. Let's call this material progress. And if we were to start with 1900 as zero and compare the progress, it would be almost a straight line up. By every standard that we can use, the world has made phenomenal material progress. Speed of communication, health of human beings, lifespan, the statistics which I checked for the beginning of 79, it is 25 point some fraction years that have been added to the longevity of every American since 1900. That means with a 213, that's the latest figure, million times 25, that means billions of years have been added to the lifespan of the United States. But then we ask ourselves, living for what? Living for what? Billions, billions of years. So that if we go to another graph,
1900. And call this the moral graph. And here we have to start at 1900 at some rather high figure. And wherever we'd start, the graph would be almost in some areas of human conduct. We have become an amoral society. Do you believe that? Amoral society. Sociologists in Europe say no society in human history has been more unstable as far as family life goes than the United States, and survived. We've had not only two major world wars. We used to talk about the World War, remember, some of you? And now we talk about the First and Second World War. There has been no peace, literally, on Earth since almost the turn of the century. And statistically, which we can measure, because to graph we've got to have some norm, statistically, there have been more casualties, more people killed in battle and as a result of the two world wars than in all the previous recorded wars of human history. Take oppression. We read about the tyrannies of ancient Babylon or Assyria. They're mild compared to the whole nations that are one large concentration camp. Father Caccini, who has been working at our institute, we just talked a little bit while I was late for my lunch. We had a conversation. He spent some time in mainland China recently in disguise, which is one of our part of our Jesuit history, to be in disguise. And he said there's only one way you can describe Red China. It is a vast intellectual concentration camp. You not only are not allowed to write what you want or say what you want, you are not even allowed to think what you want. And they really have ways of finding out what you're thinking. And if you don't think with the party, you are liquidated. On the floor of the American Congress, and this was as cold and conservative a statistic as whoever drew up the statistics could have managed. At that date, it was in the 60s, 25 million were known to have been liquidated in Red China since 1950. There are no old people in Red China. For the record, there are no handicapped, no retarded in Red China. And you know why. And that's the country, may God forgive us, that our president has recognized. At any rate, it's a question. And what a question. Is there modern progress? It all depends on how you define progress. Number 13. In section 16, I can't count, it's just that it's so soon after lunch. In number 17,
in the beginning of the fifth paragraph, where the sentence reads, already in the first half of this century, when various state totalitarianisms were developing, which is as well known that of the horrible catastrophe of war, the Church clearly outlined her position with regard to these regimes, that to all appearances were acting for a higher good, namely the good of the state, while history was to show instead that the good in question was only that of a certain party which had been identified with the state. Again, no one that had spent a whole generation under communism could say this. I summarize it by saying that parties determine social policy, and we better believe it and act on it. Thanks in large measure to the media of communication, thanks too to the ease with which people can be affected by other people, it does not take too many people in any given social unit to determine how that society is to operate. There are many factors, partly physical, but mainly psychological and social, that make it possible for a small number of people who, as we now say, wield power. For example, in communist countries, communism now controls almost one half of the human race. And almost a third of the Catholic Church is somehow under communist domination. I have been 5 years in New York, and I used to periodically make trips to New York on business before. I have attended one play on Broadway in my life. It was about maybe 15 years ago. And you won't believe it, the play was in German. And I went because one of our fathers wanted to go. So I told you, didn't I, went to one symphony in my life? Because the rector said, would you please go with Father Aveling, who was a musician. I prayed, I counted the number of pieces in the orchestra, and I slept. So I went to one play on Broadway. It was, in many ways, an inspiring play. It described how the communists take over. They take over by a small group of very willful, clear-headed people working together and practicing infinite patience. But the Pope is saying, let's not, and how important this is, let's not judge a society by that willful minority that can often determine the policy of that society. And by the way, what the communists have done in Russia, other corresponding willful minorities have done in the Catholic Church. It is my 11th year in working for the Congregation for Religious. I don't hesitate saying this, though I know I'm being recorded. In one secularized community after another, a small, very small minority working together quietly behind the scenes in time took over. As I had occasion within the past year to address a chapter along with the Mother General and her council, the Bishop of the Diocese there, and it was part of my work authorized by the Holy See to do it, I told the chapter and the council and the Mother General all the facts that I have found indicate you have all been elected illicitly. You don't have a real chapter. You don't have a real mother general. And part of the history of that secularization was about five women in a fairly large community did it. The Pope knows what he's talking about. Let's make sure, and this of course is the lesson, that we are aware of the power, because of so many factors in modern society. For example, the ease of communication. Pick up the telephone in a matter of seconds. You can be talking to somebody across the seas, right? So that solidarity can be developed. Ideas can be communicated. And the strong inner force, which of course can be for good. This is one of the conclusions that Pope wants us to draw from this. Working within society, but not to parody their bad either philosophy or their evil intentions. It does not take a lot of people to influence society today. Do you know that? That's very important. It does not take a lot of people. Very few, in fact. Keep praying, by the way, for the radio corporation that we've set up in New York. I've told you about this already. We've had two meetings with the Archdiocese of New York. We're having another meeting on Wednesday with the pontifical representative for the media. We're meeting in New York. And I tell you the name of the corporation, the Catholic Voice of America. Pray that God will bless these efforts. We desperately need, small group can do it. What others can do against God, we can do for God in Christ. Why not? Number 14. This time I happen to be right. It is section 17. Comes at the very end of the section. The Pope says, because of my office, I appeal in the name of all believers throughout the world to those on whom the organization of social and public life in some way depends, earnestly requesting them to respect the rights of religion and of the church's activity. I dare say, with our present Pope, and he will say much more about this, please God, in the years to come, we should be much more specific and more clear-headed what we're talking about when we speak of freedom of religion or religious freedom. It's become a cliche. Did you know that every communist country in the world constitutionally guarantees religious freedom? A lot of good that is. You see, by now, in our own courts, by the way, are one of the worst offenders. Having religious freedom in the Constitution of the United States is no guarantee of, notice what the Pope says, the rights of religion and of the church's activity. Because, would somebody erase this, please? The Pope distinguishes between two kinds of freedom that are needed in order for religion to truly prosper. The first freedom may be called, because the vocabulary is part of our culture, freedom of religion. So, if we say, call it liberty in two forms, there is freedom
of religion,
which is all very well as far as it goes. But unfortunately, it has, and the Pope is addressing himself to modern society, it has become in more than one country, literally, a dead letter. There is also
the freedom of the church's activity.
Now, what's the difference? Those two terms are not put there side by side casually. Believe me, there is not, what shall I call it? There is not an obvious statement in this encyclical. There are no cliches, not one. Every sentence is born of experience. Because,
well, freedom of religion is essentially internal.
And as so many countries, not excluding ours, have interpreted,
it is essentially private.
And,
in practice, personal.
So behind closed doors, whatever you do, that's your business. Or what you believe, provided you just keep it to yourself or among friends, you are free. But the church's activity, and he's talking about the Catholic Church. Now, the Catholic Church is ready and willing to concede religious freedom to everyone, frankly. But she pleads for freedom to also be herself.
And in contrast, not only internal, but external.
So I'm not only Catholic inside of me, but I somehow, well, I show that I am, and I'm not ashamed that I, of what I am.
And not only private, but public.
Do you know one reason why more church bells are not ringing? There's a whole list of court cases in which Catholics have been brought to court for disturbing the public peace, ringing the church bells on Sunday morning.
And thirdly, and most importantly, not merely personal, but social.
By the way, I'm asking you for prayers during these classes, but there are so many intentions that need to be prayed for. One of the most serious, by the way, is what's happening in India. You may have read or heard the Indian Parliament is planning to forbid all conversions to Christianity. Now, they've already succeeded in keeping all missionaries out of India. No missionary has entered India since 1950. That's 30 years. You can go there only if you prove and you testify you will not, as they say, proselytize. If you have some scientific ability as, well, an engineer or whatever, and they want them, you can come in. But not as a priest, not as a missionary. And this, of course, is Marxist-inspired, and Mother Teresa, along with the Indian hierarchy, has gone on record protesting as formally as they can against this massive injustice. So that social, so that I may not only profess my faith, but promote my faith. Because all of this talk about everyone having a right to hear Christ, means that someone must have the right to preach Christ, proclaim him. And as we know, behind the Iron Curtain, hundreds of millions, in fact, almost 2,000 million people, are in varying degrees forbidden to, outside of their house, say, ever teach religion. No classes, no schools. Number, what number were we? Coming up? 15 coming up. Materialisms, plural, is this number 15? Materialisms give birth to insatiability in the human heart. Materialisms, plural, give birth to insatiability in the human heart. Was that in your quiz, by the way?
Yeah.
It's in section 18 and is the first sentence in paragraph 4, which reads, this appeal to the Spirit, he has just been talking about the Holy Spirit, intended precisely to obtain the Spirit, is the answer to all the materialisms of our age. It is these materialisms that give birth to so many forms of insatiability in the human heart. Section 18, the opening of paragraph 4. What's the Pope saying? Two things. First, notice he uses the word in the plural. And we should start talking about materialisms. And not mistakenly suppose that communism, which as you know is dialectical materialism, is the only form of materialism in the world. Oh no. Our American secularism is as materialistic as they come. What is materialism? That philosophy of life which disclaims either the existence or the value of the spiritual world, which disclaims either the existence or at least the value of the spiritual world. In lecturing on matter and spirit, which I on occasion do, I distinguish between matter and spirit by saying that matter is that which is measurable. Matter is that which is divisible. Matter is that which is quantified, which has size, shape, measure, quantity. Spirit, on the other hand, is that reality which is not measurable, not ponderable, cannot be weighed, which is not sensibly perceptible, but which thinks and wills. The negative quality of spirit is that it is not sensibly perceptible, where matter is. A positive quality of spirit, it is that being which can think and can will. Years ago, I had occasion to read a philosophy book used at the University of Moscow. And it was in thesis form, like a book in geometry, and the title of one of the theses, then for pages, the proof of the thesis followed, that matter is the fundamental reality of which spirit is only a function. You follow the logic? Matter is the only reality of which spirit is the function. So that, or more, matter is the primary reality of which spirit is only a function. Matter is the primary function. Matter is the primary reality of which spirit is only a function. In other words, there is no spirit in man. The brain is simply the locus, that bodily organ with which we think. Thought is just, matter in motion, very refined matter, very subtle matter. If we had instruments fine enough, you could see the thoughts